We're on Shabbat Tazria, conceive. It's our portions of Vayikra, Leviticus 12, 1 to 8, Haftarah, 2 Kings 7, 3 to 8, and from the Messianic writings there, from the Besorah, the Good News, according to Yochanan chapter 7, and that was 37 through to 39. I think this is one of the portions where everyone sits there listening to the portion, and they're all sitting there going, yeah, go on, Rabbi, talk about that. You know, it's almost as bad as going through the generations in Chronicles, isn't it? Where you're just going to think, how's he going to deal with that? Well, you'll be pleased to know I'm going to do a little bit of sidestepping this morning. It's the yucky one. The weeping sores, the bodily discharges. I always have this image when I get to this portion of, you know, happy, fun-filled, joyful families sitting around their tables in the evening, reading the portion to their 3 and 4 year old children, and going, Mummy, what's a discharge? You know, I don't know how you deal with that in your families, but it's one of those moments where you go, let's move on to the little nice bits. You know, sure, we can have a quick look back at Noah's Ark, shall we? You know, something like that, to try and lift the mood a little bit. It's a difficult one, but I don't really want to focus on our run up to Pesach, which is, of course, now, as Lenka has already said, they're just a mere 2 weeks away. I just said to someone during the week, I said, oh good, we've still got this 4 weeks, and he goes, no, two. I thought, seriously, it's that quick already? Because I don't know where the year's going, but it is rolling on so quickly. So I just want to say a big Shabbat Shalom to Mark this morning. I hope you're enjoying your ale. I know this is your best month of the year, the month before Passover. I have a sneaky suspicion, Mark, that you actually store up all your ales for this month and then you knock them down day after day. I don't know, but I know you're ale drinking right now, Mark, so we send our Shabbat greetings to you. Yeah, we're almost there, aren't we, with the hoovering and the cleaning and the sorting out our homes, getting the fish fingers out of the freezer and the chicken keeves. Not Kiev, Kiev's, getting the chicken Kiev's out of our freezers and everything else. It's that time of the year. And it reminds us, I think, now, especially now if we're focusing on Passover, the run-up to it, the choices that we have to make, the journey out of Egypt, the decision to follow Adonai. And I was just pondering this, really, during the week of our journey in so many ways. And just reminded me actually something of a couple of weeks back that I was preaching on. I really felt prompted this week to do a kind of part two of the trees in the garden, but link it with our journey, for all of us, our journeys out of Egypt and our preparation for the times which are ahead. Because there's one thing we knew, we discovered when we came out of Egypt, and I think this is true for all of us. Leaving Egypt was not easy, was it? It really wasn't. I mean, we know this, the number of times we read through this, even at the beginnings of our journey, we weren't even that far on our way and on our trip, and already the number of times that we read, oh, can't we go back to Egypt? Can't we have that again? It was better then. And you think, we've only been out a couple of weeks. Seriously? Are our memories that poor? You know, the mental and cultural box that we had lived in totally straight-jacketed our view of the world and our place in it. And I'm just dealing with a little bit of this at the minute in myself. Again, something that really prompted me just discussing with Yosef Dennis, in the last week or so, discussing India and how India sees the world, and just being so astonished how different it is from how we in the West view the world. And I'm looking at myself as someone who likes to think of himself as someone who kind of culturally moves easily between various cultures and understandings, and I've been quite shocked at how deep that has gone, and actually what a challenge that is in so many, many ways. And then we kind of transfer back to that culture that we'd adopted in Egypt, and coming out of that, Egypt being the world, Egypt being sin, Egypt being all the practices and habits of everything that we are and have been as human beings, and how difficult it is to get beyond that. It's a real thing. And yet I'm blessed on one level just thinking about how the Lord saw this. It all started, in fact, so well. This is the quote from Jeremiah 2:2. He says, "I remember you, the kindness of your youth, the love of your betrothal, when you went after me in the wilderness in a land not sown." The fondness of Adonai at that moment, when he's looking back at us, you know, "I remember you as you hopped and skipped through the sea on dry land, and you got to the other side, and you were rejoicing, and you loved me, and, you know, nothing was too difficult. We just got all that behind us," and the Lord's looking at us, that little band of a nation yet forming before his eyes, and he's looking and smiling upon us and thinking, "Oh, there they're mine, look at them. Isn't it wonderful? It's great." And we marched away from the Reed Sea into the arid, dusty and uncertain journey into the wilderness. And as always, when we start out on our own spiritual journeys, the journeys of our lives, when God calls us into new things and new areas and new destinations, at moments like that, especially, you know, I'm reminded, of course, dealing with people on gateway groups and the courses and the excitement at the beginning of the gateway, and everyone is, "Yeah, we're doing gateway, and it's awesome, and it's wonderful," and, you know, and then 6-8 months in, you're beginning to get people going, "Whoa, I never realized it was going to be as challenging as this." You know? I see it frequently, so I'm always reminded of this journey that people set out upon this. At the beginning, all you see is the destination of where you're going, isn't it? For our people coming out of Egypt at that moment, all we could see was Israel at the end of it. That's where we're going! It's wonderful, it's going to be awesome, and it's easy to see where you're going when you're on a spiritual high. The reality, I think, of that journey, the goal of moving forward, the reality of all of this, I want to suggest, is closer probably to what Rav Shaul says in 2 Timothy 4:7 in his second letter there to Timothy. He says, "I have fought the good fight, I have finished the race, I have kept the faith." It's an interesting little statement, actually. I suspect, like you, most of us have focused on his second comment, "I have finished the race." And the reason, maybe because of this, especially if you're a runner, you know, if you've got any kind of athletic background, we have images. I don't know, I read this verse this week when I was thinking about this journey, and instantly my mind pictured the Olympic athletes, you know, running down the track, that sort of 100 meter sprint, or maybe a bit longer. And yet, that vision of the Olympic athletes running the track, I think, if you look at the whole statement that Shaul is putting here, surely slightly out of kilter. He says, "I have fought the good fight, I have finished the race, I have kept the faith." Link these thoughts together. This is not some bright sunny day at the Olympics with a pack of, you know, athletes, you know, highly trained, running down the track. Put these three things together and we get a very different image, I would suggest, that comes out of this idea of the journey, heading towards that finishing line, which is there. Yes, it's there. We know where we're going. And it's that anticipation, and we're waiting for the crack of the gun before we're launching off down this track. And we're focused on that finishing line that's ahead of us. But before we get there, we've got this stretch which is there. And it's not just running flat out to get there, because Shaul says, "I have fought the good fight." This is not a clear running track. This is an obstacle course. There are hurdles. There are ambushes. There are people at the sides of the track who are doing this and sticking a leg out and trying to trip you up. That's closer to the reality that we're looking at here. There are snipers on the top of the Olympic stadium taking pot shots at you as you're running this race. That's closer to the reality of what Shaul is talking about here. Yeah, we're focusing on that finishing line. But the moment that gun goes and we're off down that line, we suddenly realise the gun that was set off wasn't a bullet in the air, it was in our backs. That's the reality. We think it's a clear track to the end. We suddenly realise that the marauding hordes are there to try and stop us ever reaching that finishing line. We can run, but there are people who want to try and stop us. There's issues, situations, this world suddenly crowds in to stop us. I have fought the good fight. I finished the race, he says, but I kept the faith. I love the way that he links this concept of this journey, which is not a straight line, with keeping the faith. Keeping the faith is a struggle, it's a battle, it's a focus. It's not something that comes easy. There are traps out there, there are ambushes out there, there are people who want to destroy your faith, people who want to drag you down, people who want to break you, situations that are going to cause you to stumble and fall, that will try and crush your faith, crush your belief and toss you to one side. Yes, it is true, this is closer to the reality than just a straight running track with the finishing line at the end. If you've lived any days and walked with the Lord for any period of time, you will know what I'm saying is true. That is closer to the reality. And so it was with our people as we marched out. The start, confident and bold. And yet within 3 days, 3 days, people, 3 days. That's not even getting to next Shabbat. Within 3 days, we arrived at a place where the water ran out and we began to rejoice. No, we complained. We get there. Shemot, Exodus 15:22. So Moshe brought Israel from the Red Sea. They went out into the wilderness of Shur. And they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. So we present it here. With our fledgling nation, just like us with our spiritual walks and our lives, presented with a situation of needing to keep the faith, as it were, in the face of these existential and dangerous odds. That faith, you know, that had carried them so high, so strongly, coming out of all of that water. Isn't it ironic? You know, the Red Sea there, we went through it, we didn't even get wet. You're looking back after 3 days thinking, oh, if only we'd got wet. Wouldn't it be wonderful just to be wet right now? Water, water, we need water. The water bottles were full, and yet now after 3 days, we'd either drunk them or the water had evaporated. The reality of our journey began to kick in. And so the mental logistics and strategy games begin to play out in real time. And we suddenly realize, now our people realized at that moment, that it wasn't just, as it were, joy, 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 all the world, all the way. It seemed like at that moment, before us, even just 3 days into this, it all became about survival and not arriving. And our own faith, our own journeys, so often parallel so much of what the scriptures describe for us. You know, after all, we're all human beings. We've not changed in the thousands of years. We are still as they were. Yeah, we're modern. Yeah, we've got TV screens and proper lights and everything else, of course, which they didn't have. But you know what? This is still this. It's not changed. Human beings haven't changed. We're just the same. Just surrounded by other different things and stuff than our people were those thousands of years ago. And the arriving, the focus on where we were going, Israel, was suddenly just vanishing like a mirage before our eyes, because suddenly it became almost a day-to-day thing. I've just got to survive. I've just got to get through today. Because we've taken our eyes off the goal. Took our eyes off where we were going. Took our eyes off the promises of God, took our eyes off of God's faithfulness and promise about this journey that we were on. And we locked down to try and think that it's just surviving. And we can do this too in our spiritual lives. But what I love about the Jewish faith, what I love about Judaism, is that it never pulls its punches. Judaism always states the truth, isn't fearful about describing challenging situations. Even if we are afraid in all of this, Judaism, I have found again and again, is real. It deals with real people in real life and in real situations. Always does. is amazingly, as I call it, humanistic with a small h in that way. So much of the scriptures is about us, it's about people, it's about reality. God is God is God. You know, God never changes. We could describe God on page one of the scriptures and you could leave it there almost, because nothing's going to change. I mean, God is God, right? He is who he is. How we walk with the Lord in this world with the situations that we have is the critical bit where the rubber hits the road. And that's largely what we see and experience and read about through history. How we as his people have interacted with God and how we connected with him in all the various things that we have been through. It is very real. And what I want to add at this point, I think, of one particular, because frankly the world is in a bad place right now. And it'd be very easy for us to dress this up with our faith and hope and everything else and almost disconnect ourselves with the reality when people are afraid of what's happening around them right now. We don't know what tomorrow is going to bring, let alone next month. We don't know where we're going to be. And it'd be very easy, just as our people were here, just 3 days into the journey. It wouldn't be wrong in a human sense to have that fear and anxiety, just like our people at that point. Judaism is real in real situations and addresses the world as it is. And in the face of everything that we are facing in the world right now, we could have that same kind of existential survival fear and need to get through this. And it's a battle and I don't know and who knows. And we could respond in the same way. Because it is quite interesting. I'm going to go back to that verse again and just listen again to what this verse says. This is 15:22 in Exodus. So Moshe brought Israel from the Reed Sea and they went out into the wilderness of Shur. They went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. I am suspecting right now that you think you know what you've just heard. In the challenging situation that they were facing, just like so many of us are in this world right now. It's not. Forget this, this is real. You think you heard something which you did not just hear. The clue is in the end of that verse. It does not say, and there was no water. What it does say is, they found no water. It's a really interesting distinction. The scriptures are exactly what they are. We think we can hear what we're thinking that we're hearing, but we can be completely wrong. The Torah does not say that there was no water. It just said they didn't find it. It's an essential difference. Because you know what? There was water. There was. Right under their feet, actually. If we know anything about the Negev, we discover a discovery, of course, that Abraham himself knew from Beersheba times, that if you dig, you will find water. It is there. By some calculations, we know it's up, because it's, if you go to the well there in Beersheba today, they've got numbers on the wall. I always forget the numbers, but they've calculated how much water, the volume of water that is underneath that Negev plateau. It is millions of litres. It is there. And it is drinkable. The water is there. Water is there in the Sinai if you dig and get to it deep underground. But suddenly you begin to realize when you get a verse like this, when you're faced with the difficulties and the challenges and it's too difficult and I don't know, and I don't know, my faith was there but now it's here and it's a struggle and I don't even know where I'm going anymore. I thought we were going to the land that God had promised us, but we're 3 days in and we can't even get there. At that moment you begin to need to understand that something is there to help you, but it does not always come easy. You've got to dig for it. Of those difficult moments. Problem is, in our lives we want easy. We want drive-through McDonald's faith burgers. That's what we want. We don't want difficult. How many minutes is it going to take him to cook my burger? Are you kidding me? I've got a bit on the, you know, I mean, seriously. This is our lives. Are we nuts? What point did we leave reality behind and get like this in our lives? We want easy all the time. And my goodness, if it's a little bit of a challenge, oh, I don't know. You know, and we were discussing this. Forgive me, I'm going to be direct. So forgive me, I don't mean to be direct and offensive, but you know, sometimes speaking the truth as you find it is important. You know, when it comes to conferences, when it comes to those special moments as a community, as a union, when we come together. And honestly, I sometimes sit there with open mouth sometimes and people say, well, I would go, but it's a good 2-hour drive. Yeah, I mean, it's funny on one level, but it's not, because I've heard that said. And it just reminds me of how we have got to a place in our faith lives where if it's a challenge, then I don't want to know. If it's difficult, well, I won't be there. If it's going to be a problem and cause me to get out of my rut and my normal routine or whatever it may be, oh, don't ring my bell, because I can't, you know. One of the things, I'm going to be honest about myself here, because, you know, the place of honesty begins at home. I can remember 25, 30 years ago, back in the movement, and we were starting up the day conferences and things at the time. Oh, you'll remember this, back in Leicester days. You know, we had day conferences in Leicester, and I can remember as a younger man, my goodness, I was a younger man. I mean, I should forgive myself. I was a younger man as well, and thinking, oh, I don't know, that's a 2.5-hour drive. And then there's a 2.5-hour drive back. Oh, I mean, to my shame, you know, I was, what, I don't know, 25, 30, I don't know, whatever I was at those days, you know, but I was a younger man. You know what, I drive for hours and hours now to get to places to minister. And I don't even think about it anymore. What has changed? Because God has changed me. He's changed my attitude. He's changed my approach. He's changed the way I serve. He's changed the way I look at situations, to not look at them and go, oh, it's too difficult, it's too much, it's too this, it's too that, to now I think, Lord God, whatever it takes, I will serve you. Things need to change in us. Our people there were at the place where it was getting tough. The rubber was hitting the road. It does not say there wasn't water. It says they found no water because they weren't prepared to dig. They weren't prepared to engage. They weren't prepared to put in the work or overcome the challenge to actually find what God had already provided for them at that moment of challenge. Because it's always there. I want to suggest to you, especially with the times that are coming up, if we think we want our faith life to be easy, frankly, you might as well check out now. Because it's not going to be easy. Will you be there on that cold Shabbat morning when we have to meet outside, hidden away somewhere in the countryside because we are not allowed to meet in a building because we might be arrested? Will you be there? Or will your bed be more warm? It's, I know, but you know, if we want easy, we're going to have to wake up. We're about to hit economic crises. We talked about this and prayed about this during the week. You know, words are easy. We say, oh brother, you know, we'll give you some sugar or whatever you need, or, you know, some coffee or blah, you know. Words are easy. We are about to go into an economic period when even in our own community, I would suggest to you, there are going to be people in need, people who could even become hungry because they're not earning enough. What are we going to do? Just say, oh, bless you, brother, I'll pray for you? Or are we actually going to go shopping for them? From our own finances? Or whatever? It's not going to be easy. But you know, the people of God get through these times because you pull together, because it's family, because it's community. It's what Judaism has always done. It's what Israel has always done. It's what the Jewish people have always done. You pull together and you get through it. The shtetls that we had, you know, we often look, when we think of the Jewish shtetls in Eastern Europe at the time, we look at it and just think, oh, isn't it awful? You know, the gates were locked at 6 o'clock in the evening and the Jewish community was inside. I suspect on one level, when those gates went boom at 6 o'clock, the Jewish people inside went, we're on our own, guys. It's us. We can do this. Did nothing else. If the gates were shut, there was a protection on the community at that point. And work both ways. You hold together, you work together, you survive together. You get through these times and the challenge and the difficulties. Just as we did in the desert at those points. You've got to dig, you've got to connect. It's not an easy time of spiritual froth. I suspect those days will soon be over. If you are going to walk with the Lord, you need to be strong. You need to be challenged in yourself to rise above where you are right now and commit yourself. It's not about emotion, it's a choice to follow God at that moment. Wherever it goes, whatever it takes, whatever obstacle or ambush or whatever may be on the side of the track that you're running on at that point, aiming towards that finishing line, you need to decide you are going to arrive. Fight the good fight, run the race. Keep the faith. Because in the spiritual race that we are called to, as Messianic Jews as much as anything else right now, because we have our own challenges and issues that we deal with day in, day out. Right now, the spiritual race we are called is to dig deep into the faith and find the water that God has provided. Because it's there. It is there. Brings me to the second idea, really, that is wrapped up in all of this, because the people then come across an oasis. Supposedly, I want to say, an easy win. And I can imagine when the people arrive there, they're looking at this and going, yay, water, hallelujah, it's water. It's all been, our prayers are answered. You know the story, you've read this, don't you? When they get there, what do they discover? They rename the place Mara. Why? Because the waters were bitter, undrinkable. And the rabbis through the Midrashim, as you can imagine, over the centuries, have put question after question after question around this way and said, Lord, what was the point in creating an oasis that was a fake, that was useless? What was the point of that? We were thirsty. You knew we were thirsty. And you led us to somewhere that we couldn't drink? Are you kidding us? Why not provide pure, clean drinking water, preferably from a tap? With a water filter, you know? Why not do this? We were thirsty. Why did the Lord make the waters bitter? And it's a lesson we have to learn in all of this. I think it comes back to our living on water example again, actually, because we had to learn to do this. Although the water seemed undrinkable, actually it was the solution that we needed. If we had eyes of faith. The Lord knew exactly what he was doing with this. He knew we were thirsty and he took us to a place where there was water, but it was inaccessible at that moment. It looked like an easy win, but it was not what we needed right there and then, because something else had to happen. And it goes back to the original connection I began with 30 minutes ago now, when I said that I was going to link this back to what I was saying a couple of weeks ago. Because I was sort of reading this, chewing it over during the week, thinking, do I go with this or not? It was the tree that really stood out for me at this moment. Because the Lord's reply to the desperate prayers in the midst of the undrinkable water is what? We suddenly read, the Lord showed Moshe a tree to throw it into the waters to make it drinkable. It is a weird thing, right? Why not just make the waters drinkable first off? Why make them undrinkable and then plant a tree next to it that you have to throw in? I mean, come on. You know, it's making things overly complicated. Don't make it complicated, Lord. Make it simple. Just make it drinkable. But he didn't, because the tree was important. We have to learn something through all of this. And it's quite interesting, because the Lord showed Moshe the tree to throw into the waters. And I won't bore you with all the answers of this, about how it was an oak tree because it caused the albumin to sink to the bottom. I don't know, I'm not a chemist. But you know, there's been numerous, you can read the Midrashim for yourself. Some of it is quite amusing. Some of it's just chemical, but I mean, I think we can get beyond that. I think there's another issue that's going on really in the passage that we've got here. Because clearly this tree was not a normal tree. There's something special about this tree. In fact, even from the way the text is structured, it's like the Lord showed Moshe the tree. It's not like there's a forest going on here. It's like he showed him this tree, the tree. What tree? Well, it's not a normal tree, as the saying goes, normal is a setting on a hairdryer. Normal is not Jewish life. If you've done any Jewish life, you will know normal is not what we do, right? This is not a normal tree. And it's interesting because if you look at the Hebrew in all of this, the Hebrew gives you a clue. The tree was not shown to Moshe, it was taught to Moshe. How do you teach a tree to someone? Now, you don't really come across that in the Hebrew. You immediately think that I'm missing something here. How do you get taught a tree? Again, the concept has been subverted into, well, it was the traditions and blah, blah, blah. I think we've got to get back to what we've get back to basics in all of this. The core idea that you've got on here. Moshe was being shown this tree. And if you connect it with the trees in the garden, again, we go back to our basic choice in all of this. We are thirsty. We're presented with life's challenges and life's problems. And the choice that we are always given at that moment is of two things. You do things God's way or you do things your way. That's it. That is every single choice that we are ever faced with. Whether you're standing in Sainsbury's with a pack of prawns in your hand or whatever it may be, every choice we take ultimately comes back to, do I do it God's way or do I do it my way? Even buying houses, I mean, you know, it doesn't matter what you do. Ultimately, every decision that we are faced with and that we do brings us back to that choice. Lord, your way or my way? The two trees which are there. And I think at this moment where the waters were undrinkable, I think at this moment where, you know, we called it Mara because of the bitterness, but I want to put it to you in many ways, the bitterness was more about what was going on in their hearts. That God isn't providing or whatever at that moment, more than anything else. To remove bitterness, to make a situation into something which is going to be of benefit to you, do it God's way, not yours. Throw a tree into it, to paraphrase it, but do it God's way. Life or knowledge, what are you going to choose? Choose life or choose knowledge? This is why I think some of the chemical answers about the tree, I think, are by the by. This is man's knowledge. We can't sit there and work it out in our heads what was going on that day. It wasn't the tree of knowledge which needed to be thrown into the waters. It's the tree of life that needed to be thrown into the waters. God's way of accepting his offer and gift in a situation or working it out for ourselves. Presented with a problem that holds us up in life, an obstacle in the race of life. What do we choose? God's way of overcoming that obstacle or our way? What are we going to engage at that point? We try and solve it or do we let God solve it? And I think it's such a critical lesson for us on our spiritual journey. Again, we've got to link it with the, you know, the concept that we're going towards Pesach right now. The time of our salvation. We're reminded especially at Pesach of the good gift of life, redemption, atonement that came from Adonai to us freely. You couldn't buy it. It was given. It was to us for free. It wasn't us working it out. It was given to us. The tree of life literally put before us again. And he always offers us these things within the bigger context of whatever it may be. Do we try and change the waters ourselves into something we can drink because it's good for us? Or do we allow the tree of life to change the water supernaturally from bitterness to sweet, undrinkable to drinkable, from death to life? What do we reach out to at that moment? It's a picture for us in our spiritual journeys, preparing for Passover, preparing for redemption, the spiritual journeys of our life, running the race towards the goal of everything that God has for us in our lives. What are we going to do every time we hit a hurdle, whether it's 3 days in, 10 days, or 3 years? What do we do when we hit a hurdle? Pack up, give up, walk off the track and say, well, I started well, but never mind, hey? Or do we again focus on running the race, fighting the good fight, keeping the faith, keeping that commitment high, not being knocked by anything? Yes, I mean anything. Remember what Yeshua said? Oh, let the dead bury their dead. Whoa, that's pretty harsh. Someone who's first put their hand to the plow and then turns back, you know? Yeshua's comments are pretty severe on people who want good times faith. Are you in or are you out? You know, it's not a half and half thing. With Judaism, especially with Messianic Judaism, you're in or you are out. You cannot sit on the fence. It's all or nothing. And if it's all, it means all. But when faced with these things, we pick ourselves up, we move on again, and keep moving ahead in that journey, in that race that we are on. Because it's not our ability to reach the end in many ways. It is God who often carries us through these things too, over the hurdles. But remember, to get there you throw the tree of life into the waters and it stops being bitter and it becomes drinkable. The supernatural gift of that tree of life, a picture of Yeshua, brought deliverance and further progress for Israel at that moment. Putting it bluntly, the solution to our life's hurdles is to add Messiah into them, and then you'll be able to move on. Now, that's a very simple message, but it's true. And you can choose to exclude Messiah. You can choose to exclude God from your challenges and situations and problems and issues. If you want to, you can cut him out. God is not going to barge his way in. He's not going to come and do something in your life that you are not voluntarily surrendering to him in. If you keep it to yourself, it will be yours. He will not take it from you. But you will continue to reap what you are sowing until the moment you open that door and you say, Yeshua, please come in and deal with this. But the moment you do that, then things begin to change. To add Messiah into it is to give the power to move on in each and every situation. Yeshua brought that living water to us. We heard it this morning. He's able to make bitterness and life challenges into sweetness. And so the bottom tagline, I think, of what I'm saying today is simply this. Whatever you are facing, throw Yeshua into the water. Throw the tree into the water. And watch how it changes from bitterness to sweetness. To choose to add Messiah as an active ingredient into our lives and what we face is a choice. But if we do it, our lives will change. And I know people will say, yeah, but Rabbi, my job. Yeah, but Rabbi, my family. Yeah, but Rabbi, my this. Yeah, but Rabbi, my that. You know what? We can have a list as long as you want with yeah, but Rabbi, my. Honestly, you can put any word you want after that statement. What do you think Messiah feels when he hears those words from your lips? Who is number one in your life? You know, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, strength, soul and might. And yet we always say at the end of that, yeah, but Rabbi, my. Yeah, but God, my. I don't read that sentence in the scriptures. He just tells us. The commitment is high, I know. I'm not letting anyone off the hook. I am not compromising this morning. The commitment is high. But it needs to be if we're going to get through what is coming. It needs to be for us to be able to make the right decisions and choices now in our lives to enable us to walk that close with him. and to begin to practice throwing Yeshua Messiah into the water in that way. Again, I think I've mentioned this before, but just coming into my mind, I was mentioning again, if this is going to connect with you this morning. People say, yeah, but Lord, you know, Rabbi, I do this and I'm locked into this sin, or I'm locked into that behavior pattern. I'm locked into this. I'm just going round and round the loop. And I always say to people, which people always think is cheap to say it, but it is true. Use the blood of Yeshua. It is there to be used. But we get so strange about it. As if I can't again. Yes, you can. It's why Messiah died. To break those loops of habits and patterns and behaviour and sin. It's why he died. Don't put the one antidote to those situations in your life on the shelf because you've used it 5 times already. Because the Lord's response is, and the remaining 310 times. Use that. It's there for us and the reality is there. Use the tree of life in the water. And the final thought in all this today is this, is actually not far from this bitter water. If you read the scenario from the Torah there, this water, the bitter water oasis, not even that far away from that oasis was a place called Elim. And at Elim there was good water beneath their feet and even bubbling above the ground. Do you know what? It was not even far away from them. This is our crazy journey. This is instructive for us, because you know what? Good water was not that far away beneath their feet and even above the ground at that point. And the truth, the reality, whatever we face, whatever situation we find ourselves in, good water is never far away. It's never far away. The life-giving water is never that far away from us. Yes, there are times we've got to dig deep on occasion and stand firm and find that water and lock ourselves into that, and we have to actively engage. There are other times we discover that, oh, lo and behold, you know, that God's provision wasn't even that far away from us. We just have to look in another direction. Because the reality is, whether it's there and we just turn and find it, or whether it's beneath our feet, as it were, to dig, the reality is God's provision to move us on that journey is never far away. It is always there. But the scripture just said at the beginning that they didn't find it. Wasn't that it wasn't there. Because it was. They just didn't find it. How true is that of us? Locked into things and we just can't find that provision in the Lord to move forward. I want to remind you this morning, it is always there. It is never far away. Always it is there. But whether we take a faith dip or our belief wobbles or we have time to doubt or this world just becomes so overwhelming in its insistence on hacking us down in some way, that we struggle at those moments to dig or even to look around to see what God has provided for us. His presence, His love, His everything about Him, it is always there, never far away. Just add the tree of life to it. Add in Yeshua Himself to it. Always choose life. Amen. Amen.